morning. Welcome to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. I'm Brad Pollock in studio today. Gary Bell's out of town. Supposed to have Rob Brovich here, but he hasn't shown up yet. I hope it's not too bad. We're trying to get across town, but as soon as he gets here, he'll join us. We're here to talk to you about any of your legal problems, discuss with you any legal matters you have. We are not a political show. We're a Bell and Pollock law firm. We are personal injury lawyers in our regular everyday lawyer lives, but when it comes to this show, we talk to you about any legal problem. If we can't solve the problem or if we can't address the problem, we will take your name and number, or if we need more time, we'll take your name and number and we'll call you afterwards, after the show during the week to help you with your what you got going on and what you're doing in life. I want to remind you all that although we're on the Christmas season, distracted driving, drunk driving is still going to be a problem for many people. You do not want to get yourself a drunk driving ticket. Please stay away from the alcohol and driving. If you've been injured by a distracted driver or a driver driving under the influence, you can give us a call at Bell and Pollock. You can look us up at championsofthepeople.com or call us at 303-795-5900, and we'll deal with you and tell you how you can put together a legal game plan to address whatever might be your injuries. You can call us here at the show at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. We do have a few calls on the line, so we're going to take them right away. Martin, how you doing, bud?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I have a question about the use of the word insurance in litigation. Like, you can't, in a courtroom setting, it's actually barred from that, the use of the word insurance.
Right. You cannot use the word insurance in litigation. In your courtroom, they're not going to let you do that.
Well, that's kind of a double-edged sword because everything is laden with the word insurance. Yeah, I mean, the personal injury, commercials, everything is insurance and insurance and insurance. But yet, when you go in the final test, which is a courtroom, you're barred from the use of the word insurance because it creates a bias to some degree, right?
Well, they say it does. I'm not so sure it does anymore. I think that most people believe there is insurance. A lot of times they don't know how much. It can be anywhere from $25,000 to obviously millions. When you talk to jurors, when I've heard dire jury, Martin, I can't tell you, 90% of the time, the jurors will ask me, at least one will raise their hand and ask, why hasn't the insurance taken care of this? Or do they have insurance? And immediately we have to look to the judge, and the judge has to give an instruction saying that's another thing for you to be concerned about. How the defendant would pay any judgment that is entered is not your concern. Your concern is just to determine if the defendant is responsible, and if the defendant is responsible, how much money the defendant is responsible for.
In terms of liability.
In terms of liability.
But whether or not that liability being paid through insurance or not is really not the issue. Is that the position of the court?
That's what the position of the court is. And it swings the other way, too. You're not supposed to. I've had a defense attorney try and sneak it in a couple of times, but you're not supposed to, on the other side, be asking, well, did the victim have their bills paid by the insurance company?
Well, that strikes another question, though. If a party is put on the stand, he's giving testimony, and whether or not the defense or the plaintiff's attorney asks an open-ended question like, well, how come you didn't seek adequate medical attention? And that's pretty open-ended.
Right. And
now that person has a window of opportunity to say, hey, I didn't have enough money because I can't even pay for the insurance to cover me.
Well, sometimes
that's basically a complete answer.
And so they're not allowed to say that. They're not allowed to say that,
so they're censored in terms of their direct response to an open-ended question.
Right. They can
say, why can't you pay for your own medical care?
They say the finances. Why didn't you seek adequate medical care? Finances. Or I think my medical care was adequate based on the circumstances that I was faced with in my life. And
but yet if the respondent says, hey, because I don't have enough money even to pay for insurance, that would be stricken, right?
They can't bring that up. They can't bring that up. And I've had clients who get very upset with me because one of the things they want to address is, look, this injury now is going to make me have higher insurance, health insurance premiums in the future. And we have to be very careful about how we address that. Because
yeah, the court really, in a sense, is instructing the respondent or the plaintiff or wherever the case may be how to answer that open-ended question, because the court is now going to be on that witness.
Well, the court's going to be on the attorney to begin with. If the attorney does something like that, the court's going to get on the attorney. We do motions in advance of trial saying they can't bring up what we call collateral source payments, and a collateral source payment is an insurance payment. So we say, you know, we do a motion where the attorney on their side is ordered, you can't bring that issue up. Every personal injury case I've done a lot of trials, Martin, I'm going to tell you, the defendant always files a motion saying we can't bring up the fact that the defendant has insurance. We know that. Most of the time we agree. We just tell the court, yeah, we agree. The court enters an order, and that's what happens. We can't do it.
But yet a lay witness, even though you can tell the lay witness prior to the testimony, you can't bring up the insurance. But say the person does take the stand and he's being hammered regarding ability to pay for medical care, et cetera, and that lay person, even though he's not skilled, he or she is not skilled in it, still blurts off, well, because I can't even afford the insurance.
Yeah, Martin, it's Rob. We've had that.
Oh, hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I made it in, huh?
I did, finally. We've had that happen, and the judge basically just says disregard what that witness just said about the insurance.
But it's out there.
It is out there. And you want to know something? I think most of the time the jury knows, because the judge before jury selection will say, are any of you officers, directors of State Farm, for example?
Sure. That's the one qualifying question that can be asked in voir dire. Are any of you an officer, director, or shareholder of State Farm Insurance Company? Now, you know, or of American Family Insurance Company. Now, you know, if a jury's on top of their game and people are paying attention, they're going, now, why would he ask me, you know, if I'm an officer, director, or shareholder of American Family or State Farm or Allstate or whatever insurance company it is, unless they're involved in this?
Well, plus all the TV advertisements with personal injury attorneys out there shoving insurance down the listener's throat or the viewer's throats.
Well, yeah, I mean, with you know, once again, you know my feeling about some of this advertising, Martin. To me, it's ridiculous, and it's
carnival-like.
Yes, it's carnival-like, and I think it's demeaning and degrading. And you know, I'm not against attorneys advertising. That's okay. Some of the stuff that's going on is unrealistic and ridiculous and stupid.
But they're presenting a jaded view of how things really operate.
A very jaded view and a belief that you're going to get a lot of money and this is a fortune and everybody's going to get a lot of money. And you know, if whatever the insurance company offered me, I'm going to get 10 times that more if I go to this lawyer and he's going to make him pay 20 times more. And you know, you don't want to get me started on the advertising. That to me is, it's okay to advertise. I don't have a problem, but let's do it right. But you know,
yeah, what sports team are you representing now?
Well, you know, and the thing is, you're not allowed to have a partner that's not a legal partner if you're a lawyer.
I've watched that commercial before.
In your law practice, you can only have lawyers being your partners. You cannot have somebody else. So I don't know how that all happens, but I'm not going to get into it. Martin, thanks for the call. JR, you're next up
right after
the break. Talk to you later. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're going to come back with JR and talk about MedPay. We'll be right back. To the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Rob Brovich in studio today. Gary Bell's out of town. We're here to talk to you about your legal matters, your legal problems, whatever you want to talk about. Legal show, if you have something going on, you can reach us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. And if you're in Steamboat Springs, if you've gotten up and you're not headed out for the slopes, I understand there's a lot of snow up there. Give us a call at 970-457-1009. Give us a call to talk about any legal-related topic. Right now we have JR who wants to talk about MedPay. JR, how are you doing today?
Oh, good. Thanks for taking my call.
Good. Thank you for holding for us. What's up, man?
Just general question. I had two questions here. One on MedPay. I have Kaiser. When I do, if I do ever get an accident, what is the best strategy in using that MedPay? How can I use it? Okay.
All right.
So the other question is, accident on private property, like in a parking lot, in a mall or something like that, what legal game plan is, I know that's different then, and can police give a ticket there?
Well, you know, on private property, normally the police don't have jurisdiction, but they can give tickets under certain circumstances with the authority of the owner. They don't have to call the owner of the parking lot and say, do we have the right to give you to give this person a ticket? But in advance, they've made arrangements for the police to monitor or be able to take care of that parking lot. Most of the time, the rules in a private parking lot are very, very different. You have to follow the rules as posted in the parking lot. No one should ever believe that just because the laws are a certain way outside on the streets that the parking lots are something different. You know, if there's a stop sign, you got to stop for the stop sign. If there's a one way, you got to go the one way. If you're going opposite that, you're going to be subject to being ticketed. You're going to be subject to being responsible for the accident. However, when somebody's pulling out of a parking space and another person's going down that lane, don't think that you've got some kind of right-of-way because you're going down the lane. That may not be true. At that point, a lot of times they talk about the last clear chance and the person who could have stopped, who could have kept the accident from happening. So parking lots, my best advice to you is, number one, when you're in the parking lot, follow the parking lot rules that are posted. And number two, when you're cutting across lanes or going down the lanes or people are backing out, do not think you necessarily have a right-of-way. You may need to stop, and that's especially true for pedestrians who may be walking. Okay.
So if there is an accident, so one or both parties can call the police. They can come, or
normally, if it's an injury accident, normally the police still might come. Okay, you have a better chance they'll come and deal with the accident. If it's a car damage, most of the time the police will not respond to a private parking lot accident. They're not going to come out.
Okay.
And because they say that's on private property, we don't have anything to do with it. Once again, that all goes back to whether or not, for instance, the mall people have already contracted with the police, the municipality, to have that parking lot monitored or taken care of by the police. Sometimes they can go and they can tell the police, we want you to take care of this parking lot, and they make arrangements and they go within the jurisdiction to allow the police to do that.
Okay.
In most places, no, that's not going to happen, though.
Then on the MedPay, I have Kaiser. What's the strategy in using that MedPay when I have an accident seeking medical care?
Now, you have medical payment coverage through Kaiser or through your automobile insurance?
Automobile. I'm just saying I have Kaiser as my medical provider, but I have MedPay through an insurance company.
You can use it any way you want. I believe the legislature, the reason for passing that was to pay the first responders, because at some point in time, they were getting stiffed. The first responders were getting stiffed on their bills because there was no insurance coverage for them. So that's what it was intended for. But truly, it's up to you how you want to spend your MedPay.
But what happens, JR, when he says first responders, the ambulance comes out and takes care of you. The ambulance wasn't getting paid. And a lot of times, you know, Kaiser and companies will say, a lot of insurance companies say, we're not paying for the ambulance. And then all of a sudden, you've got this bill for a couple $1,000s. Your med pays a minimum of $5,000. And they're saying, you're going, how do I pay this? And the first responder's saying, you're not paying. If they rush you off to the emergency room, or if they rush you off and give you immediate medical care right there, that bill can get even higher. So next thing you know, you're not having, you know, you don't have the money for it. Now, Kaiser doesn't normally have what we call, well, they do. They do have some co-pays and some deductibles. And you know, my advice to everybody is usually, you know, look, use that MedPay first of all to pay for the ambulance or for the emergency room or anything that's not being paid by your insurance company. Then when you get to your deductibles and when you get to your co-pays, try and use the MedPay for that so you don't have any out-of-pocket money. And your insurance company picks up the other money.
So and I think you talked in other on other shows there about, they're going to sometimes they don't want to know what type, if you have car insurance or not, or they do want to know if you have car insurance. Like Kaiser, they'd want to know, and then they kick it into a different venue.
Well, what that usually comes out is the hospital. Let's say you're transported over to one of the hospitals, and the hospital walks in and says, okay, were you hurt in a car accident? They say yes. Well, the hospitals are saying, look, if we can go after the car insurance for the at-fault party, then we don't have to give all the breaks and all the reductions that we have contracted with the healthcare provider. And so, because the hospital, let's say the hospital is there and you've got Kaiser insurance and the hospital is going to give care. Well, they know that Kaiser is only going to pay a certain amount of money. So if the hospital bill would normally be a $10,000 bill, the hospital knows Kaiser's probably only going to give us $3,000 because they have an advance contract that any Kaiser patient is only going to have to pay $3,000 on the $10,000 bill. Okay. And that means Kaiser's only going to pay that much. They get reduced bills. It's called the amount paid versus the amount billed. But the hospital also knows that, wait a minute, if I can go against State Farm or Progressive or Geico and tell them you got to pay me under the tortfeasors, the negligent parties, car insurance, now I don't have to give that deduction because I don't have a deal with State Farm or Geico or Progressive to give them a reduced rate based on them sending me a bunch of patients. Kaiser, on the other hand, gets reduced rates because they send a bunch of patients to the hospital. So the hospital quite often will say, okay, if this was in a car accident, give me your insurance. Tell me who it is that ran into you. Tell me who their insurance is. Tell me all the different information about the car accident. And then what will happen is the hospital will bill the car insurance company rather than the healthcare insurance company.
Okay. So are they entitled to have that information?
No, I don't. Yeah. We tell them, no, you don't give them that information. You tell them, here's my insurance card. Take my insurance card. You've got to take my insurance card. That's okay. What I'm here for. I want you to take my insurance card. Because once they get involved in your car insurance case, you've got a real mess. Now you've got another party. They will get involved eventually anyway because they come back and your health insurance company, Kaiser, will assert what they call a subrogation right to get paid out of that accident. But the difference is the hospital is asserting a right to get paid $10,000. Kaiser is asserting a right to get paid $3,000. Huge difference in what's going to happen to the money when it gets paid out. So don't give them that information. Say, here's my health insurance card. And all these hospitals have contracts with the health insurance companies. They've got specific contracts, JR, that say they've got to take their insurance. And here's the rate you can charge our insured for this care. And so you look and say, here's my card. Take my card. That's how I'm paying you. And you've got a contract. You got to take it.
Good advice. Okay. Thank you, then.
Okay, Jerry. Hey, you have a good day, and we'll talk to you next week when you got something else for us. All right, buddy?
Hey, thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. We do have lines open, 303-713-8255 or 970-457-1009 if you're in Steamboat. We're going to talk a little bit. Rob, let's talk a little bit about when we start talking about med pay and health care. And, Gary and I are always talking about people should get the highest med pay possible.
True. See, the medical payment coverage, it really helps you out in terms of paying your deductible, if there's any co-payments and things of that nature. Anything that your health insurance would not cover, that's what you can use your med pay for. Most people carry about $5,000 on their policy, but if possible, carry as much as you can.
And for sure, try to go back to your health insurance policy and find out, if you can, how much deductible you have. I mean, nowadays, a $5,000 deductible, the deductibles are higher than that, and the copays are higher than that.
Very true. Many, many times you'll find your deductibles are $5,000 or even more on your health insurance, and not to mention, you're going to get stuck with a copayment just about every time when you see a doctor. And that is the perfect opportunity for you to use your medical payment coverage beyond and beyond paying just for the ambulance.
Right. You're talking about what we call, in essence, bridge insurance, or you're getting insurance that covers what's going on with respect to the part that you don't have protection on from your health insurance company.
Exactly.
Get it. It's cheap. It's great insurance. It's going to pay. And you want to make sure you have that, because if you get in an accident, the last thing you want to do is drain your account to pay for those medical bills. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Give us a call, 303-713-8255, about any topic you'd like to talk about. If it's family law matter, you got something going on, let us know. We'll talk to you or try and give you some help on it. 303-713-8255, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255. Brad Pollock, Rob Brovich in the studio. We're going to go straight to the phones. First, we're going to talk to Eric, and then we're going to talk to Jane and Mike about some issues they got. Eric, how you doing, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You got something down there that we want to come eat?
Absolutely. We got all kinds of things cooking. We'll start off with our breakfast special for one more week. That is those candy cane pancakes. They are red and green. They are scratch buttermilk pancakes. They're loaded with crushed peppermint candy. We're going to top that off with whipped cream and some real maple syrup. That's going to be the breakfast special for one more week. And our lunch special is kind of going with the weather still. It's kind of cold outside, so we're doing our own chili bowl. We have our scratch-made beans. You can put our red or green chili. That's house-made as well. We're putting shredded jack and cheddar cheese on that. We're going to put a dollop of sour cream on top of that. Can't beat that. That's going to be the lunch special for the next week. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, every Monday, every Friday from 11 to 2. It's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's all-you-can-eat. It's only $7.99. That actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. You can simply not beat that. And I can't offer you the umbrellas, but I can offer you big flat screens in college football and bottomless mimosas for $10. So those are plenty of reasons to come down on top of all of our other stuff that's on our menu. Everything's made from scratch. Nothing's out of a can. Come on down, check it out, hang out with a great crew, great service, great food, and have a great time.
Well, the pancakes are great. Now I'm headed down there for some of that chili, Eric. It sounds
absolutely
really good. Okay, hey, Eric, where are you located down there?
4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
All right, Eric, we'll see you later today, okay?
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you, and thank you for dealing with us and keeping us advised on what great food we can get and where we can get it. We're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to talk to Jane. Jane, you have a medical insurance question?
I do. So it's kind of twofold. The first question is what is legal as far as what they can ask when you're shopping around for a new insurance policy. So my employer is insured by Aetna, and they are looking at shopping around for another group policy a little bit cheaper. And when they do that, we were all given a health questionnaire that we were told we were required to fill out that asks lots of questions. And I'm sure that the insurance company is looking at what their outpay will be, their expenditures will be, so they can tell my company if we qualify for that particular plan. But I guess it seems violative of privacy rights that they're asking all these different health questions and what kind of medicines you take and what kind of conditions you have. So my first question is, are they allowed to ask those kinds of questions?
Well, the first thing it's going to be is, when they're asking the question, is it a question that's going to affect the premium or what kind of coverage they're having to give, okay? Now, I know that here's the thing, though, is how is the questionnaire being routed? Because when you say it comes through work, if you're routing the questionnaire through work so that people at work can see what the health care is or what the health question is, that's a different question. As far as the insurance companies need to know, now that comes under protection of that being safeguarded information. And that's protected information. And so it's two different reasons. The health insurance company that's about to give coverage, and if you want coverage for that pre-existing condition and for the care that you're getting, the medications and things you're getting, and if that's what's being considered, then the health insurance company has a right to know that.
Okay. And I think that's why they ask the question. Certainly they want to know what they're going to be looking at as far as this group policy, what kinds of prescriptions are we paying, what kind of treatments are your group members going to be needing. So then the way the questionnaire was routed is it came from our HR representative. We're a fairly small company. So I did actually ask her, who will have access to this questionnaire. She said it's just going to come back to me, and I'm going to give it to the insurance company. So my next question is because of her position in HR and having access to certain kinds of information, she is bound, yes or no, I would assume yes, by certain privacy restrictions or maybe even under HIPAA, to not disclose what people have answered on those health questionnaires?
Without a doubt, they can't spread or disseminate that information. But you have to trust them as well.
Well, right.
Go ahead, Jane, you there? Jane, you there? Okay, looks like we lost Jane. Jane, if you get a chance, give us a call back. We're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to go to Bones real quick. Bones, got an auto accident going on in Greeley?
Yeah, well, this is kind of crazy, but I was on my motorcycle. I was at a stop sign, and, you know, I had my feet down, and there was some gravel underneath my left foot, and I kind of adjusted my weight in my foot. The gravel made me lose my balance. I and the bike went down. I broke some ribs and everything. Anyhow, the ambulance came. They took me to the hospital. I have Medicare and a real good supplementary. I have no deductible with it. I never reported it to my insurance company, my automobile or motorcycle company, because I didn't hurt the bike. I took the damage for the bike, and I didn't want my rates to get, you know, raised. But I heard you guys talking about, you know, the hospital trying to get, you know, go to the insurance company. It's been several months. I haven't gotten any bills, and I've been checking them. Medicare and my supplementary have been paying that. But would that be considered an accident? The cops never gave me a ticket or nothing.
It definitely could. That would be something. If you didn't have such great insurance, a lot of people would use their MedPay coverage for for the ambulance or anything that your health insurance did not cover. But yeah, without a doubt, that could be considered some kind of a vehicle accident or crash.
Okay. Instead of just being an old geezer that can't hold his bike.
No, I'm not so sure it comes under that qualification. What it does come under, though, and the point of it is, it sounds like you're not getting charged for anything right now. You have not had to take any out-of-pocket money.
None whatsoever.
Okay. And once again, what I would tell you is use the insurance that's paying the bills right now to pay those bills.
And yeah, that's what I'll do. And then my kids got on me, and I went and got one of those trike kits, and they said, now I won't be falling over.
Maybe it's a good idea sometimes.
Tell them.
I appreciate this show. I listen to it every day or every Saturday.
Thanks for listening. And those trike kits can be even more dangerous to them, so they got to be careful about that.
Yeah, it's altogether a different type of riding. And I have, it's kind of like the old days when they had the sidecar motorcycle.
Right, right.
And you got to lean way out when you do your turn. But
otherwise, you're going to be tumbling all over the place. You don't want to do that either.
Yeah.
I think you were okay. Just because you had a momentary loss of concentration, you're still all right, Bones. Just keep riding.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling us. We're going to stay right with the phones because I'm going to go right over to Mike. And after Mike, I'm going to talk to Brian. Mike, you have an RTD hit by parked car or hit a parked car?
Yeah, my girlfriend, her son goes to the University of Colorado there in Boulder, and he was parked in the dorms, and he wasn't even in his vehicle. He was in the dorms itself, and he just had it parked there, and I guess the RTD bus came around the corner and cut the corner too close and clipped the side of his car. He was parked on the end. There happened to be a campus officer that saw the whole thing happen and, you know, wrote the ticket right then and there, notified everybody and everything. But now when we go to RTDs, they say it's not their fault and that, you know, they're not liable for the accident. We're like, well, you know, what are we supposed to do? Do we have to, you know, sue them or what do we do? Because they pretty much almost ripped off the bumper and took out the light. Yeah.
How do they say it's not their fault?
I don't know. They just they keep giving us the runaround. Oh, you need to talk to this person, and they give us to the other person, and we get frustrated and, you know, give up, basically.
You're not going to give up. You're not going to give up.
No, we're not giving up, but it's just, you know, an hour later on the hold, you just kind of...
Here's what I say. First of all, it sounds like you've been talking to me. You put anything in writing yet, Mike?
No, not really. I kind of only know, like, the gist of it. The girlfriend's been dealing with most of it, but I just heard that you guys were talking about car accidents and stuff like that, so I thought that I would go ahead and give you guys a call and find out what the best strategy to take on this is.
When did this happen?
I didn't know that she, beginning of November.
So
it wasn't even like a week or two ago.
I think what we got to do, did the girlfriend get an estimate of the damage to the car and know what's going on?
Yeah, it was roughly about $1,300.
Okay, I think what's going to happen is you need to get a couple letters from a lawyer. We can put you on hold and get your number. You can give us a girlfriend's number. You can have the girlfriend call our office or whatever you want to do. Okay. But we're going to start it by getting your number and calling you, and then getting whatever information you want to give us on the girlfriend to make sure she's okay with it. And we're going to get all that information. Okay. We're going to send out a couple attorney letters from one of our attorneys in our office to make a demand on RTD and find out why they're not paying. Come on. Your car's parked. Yeah. The car hit it. He got a ticket. And do you know what's happened with the ticket? Has he gone to court on the ticket?
No, not yet, as far as I know.
Okay, so I want to get on this right away.
He didn't even get a ticket, as far as I know. It was just like, they called him and let him know that, you know, his car was hit, basically.
Right. Don't waste a second more of your time on the phone. We'll help you out and take care of this.
Perfect. Let us put you on hold. You hold now and give Kevin your information, and we'll call you this week, all right?
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for listening to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. We did lose a caller. If you call back, we'll get you right on the line. And we had another person drop off. Brian, there you are. We'll have you right after that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Rob Brovich in studio. There's one thing I want to make sure everybody understands is you're making a big mistake if you don't stay after this show and listen to the Larry and Barry Real Estate Show. It's a great show. These guys really know what they're doing. And listen, even if you're not in the market to buy a house or to sell a house, or listen to them. They can tell you valuable information that you need to know even about your home ownership. So listen to them. They do a two-hour show. They do an hour. Then they wait around the house comes on, which is a great show, too, for anything you want to do around your house. And then they come back on and take calls. You really want to talk to them. If you have questions, make sure you call and ask them. And listen to their show. They're great people, and these guys are really knowledgeable. I want to talk to Brian right now. Brian, you have a question about lawyer consultation fee?
Consulted with a lawyer, and I decided to hire him. This was on a civil case, and about 2 weeks later, I decided to go with another attorney. So I called him, and he says, "Yeah, you know, we'll refund your money." I had signed a contract and all that, but it says you can stop anytime, and he sent me the refund check minus the $250 consultation fee, and he advertised free consultation. He didn't send me an itemized bill for any work he had done. I'm pretty sure he didn't do any work other than the consultation, and just wonder what recourse I have.
If he's advertising free initial consultation, I don't see why in the world that person should be entitled to any kind of fee.
Right. I don't understand why he's doing that, and it doesn't make sense. I think probably you're entitled to the entire $250 back. I would like to see the contract. Did he have you sign a contract when you gave him the retainer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the contract to see if it addresses any part of it.
I looked through it. I didn't see anything. But, I haven't contacted or made any way.
Okay, Brian, I'm losing you a little bit, but here's the thing. Okay, are you there?
Yeah.
Great. Here's the thing. What I want to do is I want to take your name and number. We'll call you off the air this week. Get the name and number of the attorney who held the money out. Either send a letter or give the attorney a call. Say, wait, you can't hold the $250, and see if we can't get the refund for you.
Okay.
Does that sound okay with you?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
All right. Let's hold and get that done. There's no reason to be talking more about it on the air. Because it might be just a bookkeeping situation. I want to make sure that this is an intentional act. That it might be bookkeeping where the bookkeeper or somebody just said, here's an hour that was charged and I'm going to take the $250. So let's see if we can help you off there. All right.
Great.
Thanks. Thanks for talking to the Bell and Paul Kluge Show or calling us. We're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to talk to Dean. Dean, you have an attorney fee question?
What a great segue for my question.
Yeah, that is.
What can exactly. we do for you, man?
All right. I sent Rob an email with some attorney's fees from Brownstein, Hyatt, and Farber.
Okay.
You familiar with that?
Yeah, of course.
Good. I was flabbergasted at what that case cost. I'm not a lawyer or anything like that, but $750,000.
Whoa.
For that case. That's one.
I tell you what, sometimes, obviously, we're not going to speak negative about attorneys, but a lot of times when...
Well, we can speak negative. if the attorneys are doing something wrong, we will speak negative. I'm not going to protect them any more than anybody else, Dean. And, what is this one where you got charged $750,000?
Oh, no. This is where the city of Aurora was charged $750,000.
Okay.
Okay. I filed an open records request to get the cost of that.
Wow.
And it was it was almost $750,000. Now, I follow that case. I don't know any of the guys there, but I have followed that. I live in Aurora. And I was flabbergasted, but now and part of the response, I mean, you know, this was, that the city had filed when they said that they were going to go after attorney's fees. If we win, basically the city wins.
Okay.
And they did win. It was a jury trial.
Okay.
And the city starts backing off on going after that money. And now Murphy probably doesn't have $750,000 sitting around in his checking account. He's a retired deputy chief, you know.
Right.
But my question on this was, here you're holding a carrot out here. Look, and this is a First Amendment case. I think you guys kind of remember that.
Right.
And this is a five-year-long case. Murphy fought this thing pretty hard. He overcame a summary judgment. He had the stamina to hang in there. And, this was probably devastating when he loses this case, but it was a First Amendment. This thing could have kept going, and I think it could have. But I think that either Brownstein, Hyatt, and Farber, or the city says, look, we're going to make you pay this $750,000 unless you promise you won't appeal. And well, I wonder if that's even ethical.
Well, you know, there are some negotiations that I'm sure will go on behind the scenes. Okay.
And stop right there. That my next request for records, I'm going to ask for that stipulation.
Well, sure. And I think you're going to be entitled to. And when I say behind the scenes, I don't mean secretive. Murphy had, if I remember right, now that you're telling me the case, Murphy had two attorneys. I think he had a McLeod or somebody like that and Sisson from two law firms.
They're the same firm, but they work together.
Right. And and Brownstein had at least two attorneys. Didn't they have Fitzgerald and Barrett both working on it?
Yes.
Okay, so they had at least two attorneys working on it, and it was a very hard-fought case. And what you had is probably on Murphy's side, you probably had the attorneys working on a contingency basis. A lot of times the fear of having attorney's fees awarded against you by the other side is mitigated when the person says, yeah, well, you get a judgment against me, I'll go down to the bankruptcy court and I'll drop it. So, you know, but a bankruptcy is a very difficult thing to have to put up with also. And so a lot of times you don't want to have to go through a bankruptcy. And so at that point, what you're looking at is you're saying, Okay, I'll drop an appeal. I'll drop further proceedings, or I'll end further proceedings, so that we don't have to go through the appeal. And so that could be a very a negotiating point that the Brownstein firm's doing right now. I mean, well, go ahead.
Well, okay. Let me ask you a question then. If they forgive the $750,000, all right, and you got if you're in a situation where you're forgiven debt, is the city going to give Murphy a 1099 for that forgiven debt?
Good chance. I'll tell you, it happens more often than not. Now, whether this would happen is a question, is whether or not that debt's final, whether or not a judgment has been entered, whether or not a 1099 should actually happen. But I will tell you, quite often when you have debt forgiven by companies, by lenders, by different groups, they will send you a 1099 by credit card companies. You bet. And it's a financial game. Hey, Dean, we got to go.
Okay.
Feel free to call us next week. I'm happy to talk more about this.
And,
okay,
we'll answer any of your questions.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Okay. And James from Erie, I'm sorry we weren't able to get to you about your attorney questions. Please call us next week. We're more than happy to talk to you. I'm just sorry we couldn't get to it. Or if you want to leave your phone number, James, we'll talk to you off the air this week. You've been listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show. We come to you every Saturday morning. Stick around. Listen to Larry and Barry. You're going to enjoy it. And come and talk to us next week. We're happy to talk to you about your questions. And everybody stay safe and enjoy the Christmas season between now and then, or the holiday season. We'll talk to you next week. The way the moonlight shined upon her head.